What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast. It is Wednesday, January 23rd. You know what that means? 1, 2, 3. Exciting stuff if you're into numerology and crap like that. I'm Will Brinson. I'm the host of the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports' daily NFL podcast. Joining me on this Wednesday, the one, the only, Jason LaCanfora. What's up, buddy?
What's going on, my friend?
Not much. Getting excited for the Super Bowl. We're going to talk some Super Bowl matchup. We're going to talk some gambling stuff. We're going to talk some officiating stuff. We'll share that to the end in the interest of, you know, we talked about, it'll be different angles, but we talked about it with John Breach yesterday. You can go check that out. Good conversation there. And of course, we had our Sunday recap show in which Sean and I screamed at each other about Patrick Mahomes. If you like the pod, we appreciate any reviews, make sure to subscribe on iTunes and get prepared because we're going to be live from the Super Bowl, 5 days a week. I assume just one show a week, but it'll be published same podcast time. Early in the morning, we'll record it the day before. We'll get Jason on there, I'm sure, and we'll do. It'll be fun, and we'll also have a live show from like noon to one on CBS Sports HQ. You can watch Jason there, cbssports.com/live. Be live for the Super Bowl the entire week, and then of course you will be doing a absurd amount of television. I believe what do you got? Tops in the evenings, and then Super Bowl live.
Yeah, basically, if you're in front of the television the week leading up to the Super Bowl and you want the best Super Bowl coverage, just go to CBS Sports Network, and if it's between the hours of 6 a.m. and midnight East Coast time or 3 a.m. and 9 p.m. West Coast time or somewhere in the middle in the Midwest, we will have live programming from Atlanta with great guests, great content all week long leading right up through the game and the I think we've got a 6-hour NFL Today pregame show Super Bowl Sunday. So yeah, we will be cranking.
Yeah, we'll have I don't know if they're doing anything in the I'm sure they're doing Boomer show on in the mornings and then Rome and Tiki and Tyranny.
Exactly.
And then live 24/7.
All live from there. And then we'll have special programming in the afternoon. Tops I think we'll have NFL Monday QB live from 5 to 7 on Monday, and then we'll have coverage of media night Monday night, and then the rest of the week, I think we have Tops from 5 to 8 we'll have Tops, and then from, I don't even know, Will. I'm all confused now. No, from 6 to 8 we'll have Tops, I think, and then 8 to 10, we have something else, and then 10 to 12, we have Super Bowl Live. We got you covered.
I saw a bunch of
I don't know the names of all the shows yet. I just looked at my schedule, and there's we've got a lot of content coming your way.
We're gonna blast you in the face with content. That's the new CBS Sports Super Bowl motto. Get your face blasted with content. Anyway, let's blast your faces with some discussion of the Super Bowl matchup. All right, Jason, what's your initial thought besides another Patriots Super Bowl? I mean, what do you think? Patriots, all right, actually, we were talking about this before we started recording, and you've made the point that maybe the Patriots are underappreciated. I think it is easy when we are seeing the Patriots like 6 out of the last 10 years in the Super Bowl. It's easy to get Patriots fatigue, but like what they're doing is ridiculous, right?
I mean, it shouldn't happen in any era, much less this era that
any sport
was set up to prevent this. I mean, that's why when, you know, the league adopted free agency and went from plan B free agency in the mid-90s to more full-blown free agency, they did it with the salary cap and with all the revenue sharing and all these other mechanisms that are designed to pull everybody to the middle. And these guys are the ultimate outliers at a time where it should be more difficult than ever in the history of probably any sport to be an outlier. I mean, let's face it, basketball, it's a 12-man roster. You know what I mean? You assemble 3 Hall of Famers at any given time, and you have the makings of a dynasty. And I know they have luxury taxes and all that, but they also have exemptions and ways. Obviously, it's, you know, like just look at the Warriors. You know what I mean? Look at, you know, wherever LeBron goes becomes a mini dynasty, right? So it's easier than basketball. you know, I know hockey has a revenue, not a revenue sharing model, but a salary cap that they put in after the 2004 lockout. But, I mean, it's still smaller roster size. I think one generational player can carry you a little bit more. You saw what the Red Wings did under Scotty Bowman, but, you know, no one's even come close to that. Football should be the hardest. It's so many moving pieces. The rosters are so big. The salary cap is significant. You couple that with the draft and with the way revenue sharing models work and everything else. It really is corporate socialism for billionaires. Yet these guys are, I mean, 8 straight championship games. Tom Brady's, what is this, his 11th Super Bowl?
It is his 11th Super Bowl. Because he's won 5 of them. He's lost 3 of them. Is it 11? It's 9th Super Bowl, right?
9th Super Bowl.
Belichick's 11th Super Bowl.
Belichick's 11th Super Bowl. Brady's 9th.
Yeah, Belichick has
8 straight championship games. I mean, I think they've missed the championship game. They failed to reach at least the championship game one time in 15 years.
Listen to this. This is since 2000.
Come on.
Here's 2001 AFC quarterbacks in the Super Bowl. I'm going to run through them very quickly. Brady, Gannon, Brady, Brady, Ben, Manning, Brady, Ben, Manning, Ben, Brady, Flacco, Manning, Brady, Manning, Brady, Brady, Brady. I mean, like, I feel like I said, I mean, it's absurd how many times Tom Brady has been in the Super Bowl. And what's particularly crazy is that they've done it in, like, they've retooled. This is how you do a dynasty, right? I mean, like,
reinvented themselves a million, 10 different times. I mean, they did it with Antoine Smith and 3 yards and a cloud of dust and a really, really good defense, right? And then Brady started to emerge, and the defense was still really good. And then they had no defense, but they drafted the 2 tight ends and then eventually added Randy Moss, and it was chucking it all over the place. And then, obviously, Aaron Hernandez goes to prison and Randy Moss is gone and they reinvent themselves again. And now it's new slot guys and it's all, you know, Edelman and Amendola for a while. There's no outside receivers and not much of a running game. And then they evolve to, well, we used to just have one Kevin Falk. Now let's have like a roster full of Kevin Falks, right? And then it's like James White and Deion Lewis. And we'll throw Burkhead in the mix too. And, you know, you kind of ride that a while, and meanwhile, any given week, they completely could change their identity based on opponent, regardless of what the season sort of philosophy looked like. It might be for them. It's absolutely positively ridiculous. It won't be fully appreciated until a decade passes. From whenever Tom Brady retires, a year from now, 2 years from now, whatever, once 10 years pass from that point on and you see how what this league normally looks like and how a team gets hot here and boom, they're in 1 year, and a team gets hot there and boom, they're in the next year. And, you know, as great as Mahomes is going to be, he's not going to ever go to 8 straight championship games. You know what I mean? No. I just don't think that's going to happen.
No. Part of the problem, too.
As much as people want to hate on it, I don't and never have, because it's like the longer this keeps going, the more of an anomaly it just is, the more historical it gets, the more it's going to resonate and stand out as this absolutely ridiculous, I can't call it a blip on the NFL time-space continuum, because it's over, you know what I mean, because it's going on 2 decades. Mm-hmm. But it is absolutely counterintuitive to think this is even possible.
It shouldn't be possible. It shouldn't be possible. It's 18 years. I mean, Tom Brady, Sean McVay, who is coaching against Bill Belichick, was in 9th grade when the Patriots won their first Super Bowl. I mean, what are we doing here? Like, that's, I mean, I remember being in college at living at a house on Groveland Avenue in Raleigh, and watching the Patriots, we had just gotten, like, Jason Cherry, my roommate at the time, had just gone to Best Buy and bought a new, like, 42-inch flat-screen TV. It was the top of the line. Nobody had
right.
it. We watched the Rams beat the Patriots, or the Patriots beat the Rams in 2001, shocked by the outcome. I mean, it's just crazy. Do you buy into the full circle notion of all this, that, you know, they beat the Rams in 2001.
Rams, book ending it. Yeah. I mean, it's just, but look how different that Rams franchise is now. Like, I'm pretty sure, okay, so the COO of the Rams, Kevin Demoff, I'm about to turn 45. I think Kevin's younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm thinking that Kevin Demoff, who ushered the Rams from St. Louis to L.A. and, you know, spearheaded the stadium, getting the stadium built in Inglewood, and who basically hired Sean McVay, Kevin had to probably be in college when the Rams played the Patriots in that other Super Bowl. Or if not, he was right out of college, like working for the Arena League team, like in Orlando or whatever, or, you know, before he even got to the Tampa Bay Bucs.
Yeah. I mean,
you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's the, like, I can remember, like, I've been married to my wife, what, 16 years. I can remember going to a Super Bowl party with her the Janet Jackson year with, you know, the Timberlake Janet Jackson, the Panthers, Patriots Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And, like, we weren't married yet. You know what I mean? And now I've got a kid who's going into high school. And that wasn't even the first Brady Super Bowl.
I remember that Panthers, that Panthers Patriots Super Bowl. So I was living at a, we were living on Cherry Lane. So I was still just out of college. I wasn't just out of college, but some of my roommates were. And, my roommate Wes, who was a New Englander, was in this house full of Panthers fans cheering on Tom Brady and the Patriots. And my other roommate Will, after one point, Wes got up and was like, yeah, my other roommate Will got up and slapped him in the face in front of like 40 people in the room because he was cheering for the Patriots in the middle of this house that was full of Panthers fans. It was like just a pure record scratch moment. But I mean, like it's been 18 years. It's insane. Jared Goff was 7 when they won their first Super Bowl. Tom Brady won his first Super Bowl. 7!
No, it's, I mean, and what, you know, he beats Mahomes. Mahomes, I think, was 5 when Brady took over for Bledsoe as the starter in New England. It's, I mean, it'll warp your mind. And I'll have to run the stats again. I ran them the morning of Super Bowl Sunday last year. I looked at the top 10 pass catchers from Tom Brady. So all-time most receptions from Tom Brady. And at the Super Bowl last year, Kevin Falk was still like 3rd or 4th, and Ben Watson was still in the top 10. I mean, Ben Watson hasn't been in New England for over a decade.
Yeah, I mean, Ben Watson's
getting...
Right?
He only played out his rookie contract there, and he was gone. He was still 10th in reception. So it's not like this guy has been... like, there's no continuity. You know what I mean? It's like Wes Welker's like 2nd. Welker hasn't been there in forever. You know what I mean? Like, the list of guys is like... I mean, you've got Gronk and Randy Moss, but then it's a whole bunch of 7th-round picks and street free agents and converted quarterbacks. You know, it's Edelman and Amendola. You know, it's a 3rd-down back and Kevin Falk. I think Deion Lewis might have squeaked his way in there. I know Ben Watson was definitely 10th. Aaron Hernandez was on there. I mean, it's like – I mean, Brandon Lloyd, like, just missed the cut. You know what I mean? It's been – like, there have been no constants other than Brady – other than some key ones, Brady, Belichick, McDaniels, except for a blip here with the Rams and a blip here with Denver, but you know, pretty much McDaniels. You know, Ernie Adams, the guy behind the guy, sort of Bill Belichick's fixer, you know, mastermind, strategist, whatever the heck you want to term his title to be, and then everything else is and Caserio. Caserio's been there pretty much the length and breadth of it, and everything else has changed.
So I just ran the thing for you in Pro Football Reference, and you're right. This is stunning.
Read the name. I mean, it's like, this is, and then so, if you go a little further, like, I swear to God, Brandon Lloyd and like,
no, this is, here's
like
the
Dante Stallworth were popping up. I'm like, these dudes haven't been there forever.
Here's the best one, I think. All right. So this is, we're talking about most receiving yards for the New England Patriots from 2001 to 2018. Number 26 on this list is Josh Gordon. Josh Gordon was there for 8 games.
Played
this
for half a season.
Yeah. So number one is Gronk. That's no surprise. I mean, he's at 7,861 yards, which isn't even that crazy a number. Number two is Wes Welker, 7,459.
Right.
3 is Julian Edelman.
Edelman,
4 is Deion Branch, who hasn't been there since 2012. 5 is Randy Moss, 6 Troy Brown, 7 Kevin Faulk, 8 David.
Troy Brown converted defensive back, Kevin Faulk third down back.
8 is David Patton. What?
Yeah.
9
Dude,
is
Dude, I think
nine,
David Givens like might have just missed the cut. It was unbelievable when
nine,
I ran it last.
9 is Danny Amendola, 10 is David Givens, 11 is James White, who was drafted by them in 2014 and is a running back. 12 is Ben Watson, 13 Aaron Hernandez, 14 Aaron Hernandez.
So those two dropped from a year ago. So those two were in the top 10 a year ago. So they've been pushed out by White. And
this is insane. I mean, like, I believe it. Like, all these guys are...
And he's the greatest of all time, and people are like, well, oh, but they win all the time. I mean, dude, this is who he's played with. Like, go take any other quarterback from this era and say that's going to be... They're going to play this long, and that's their top ten. You know what I mean? Like, if you're looking... Go look at Peyton Manning's. I've always hated this debate. Tom Brady is infinite. I don't say infinite. He is better than Peyton Manning by any metric. Peyton, how many Hall of Famers? Peyton's got Reggie Wayne. Peyton's got he's going to have Marvin Harrison in that top 10, right? Mm-hmm. He's going to have Marshall Faulk maybe in that top 10. Go run Peyton Manning's top 10.
All right, so we're looking at Colts receiving yards from 1999 to 2012. Does that work? Most receiving?
Yeah, I guess it would have been.
Was Manning drafted in 98? He was 98, wasn't he? Yeah.
98.
Because T. Martin, 2012 was when Andrew Luck was drafted. So it'd be 2011, I guess.
2011 season.
Yeah, 2011, because he was drafted in 98, because T. Martin won the, the Super Bowl, or the college football championship in 19. Oh, this isn't that great. Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne, Dallas Clark, Marcus Pollard, and Edgerrin James. The top five is better.
Okay, so yeah, 4 of the top five are what? 3 of the top five are Hall of Famers, that was a pretty good tight end for a decade.
Well, I mean, Marvin Harrison had 12,878 yards. Reggie Wayne 11,708. Both of those guys would be 1 and 2 on Brady's list. Marshall Faulk is 15 for Peyton Manning. Brandon LaFell is 15.
I mean, Marshall Faulk may be the best pass catching running back in the history of the game.
I mean, he got traded, of course. I mean, look, there's only 30 guys on the list. With over 100 receiving yards for Peyton Manning in that stretch. There are 69 guys over 100 receiving yards for Tom Brady.
Gronk. You should actually tweet that stat at Gronk. He'd be very happy.
He would be. I mean, Chad Johnson is 47. Like, Cordarrelle Patterson is 52. Well, LeGarrette Blount is 60. Deion Lewis is 28. I mean, there's just running backs. Dante Stallworth is actually there for a decent amount of time. Reshae Caldwell, 23. It's just crazy. Let's get into, what do you think about this matchup against the Rams though? I mean, is the Patriots are now, I believe, up to maybe, they're up to 2.5 point favorites. After opening for
a lot
some,
of early money came in on them, huh?
They opened up as a 1 point underdog for some reason, and they were there for about 10 minutes, and it flipped.
Well, it worked, right? I mean, they know what they're doing, because then all of a sudden, I was reading somebody put a $150,000 bet on the Patriots, and then somebody put a $200,000 bet on the Patriots, and next thing you know, the line's swinging.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, because what happens is
they induced big money at the onset, or with 2 weeks before that game was played. They obviously know what they're doing, right? I mean, they got enough money coming in. I mean, somebody could break their ankle between now and then in practice. You know what I mean? Like, 2 weeks before the game, Vegas, they got enough money right off the bat that it moved the line 2.5 to 3 points.
Well, Vegas is going to be rooting hard for the Rams, ironically. You know, like they Vegas needed the Patriots against the Rams in 2001 bad. I mean, there was a lot of smart money back then on the Patriots, but they were also like, everybody's like, greatest show on turf. These guys are going to throttle them. If you're a 14-point favorite in the Super Bowl, nobody's betting against you. Just like the Patriots and the Giants back then. They're 2.5 point favorites and people are hammering the Patriots, and John Murray at the Westgate said he expects it to go up to 3 at some point during the week. You think you could see some buyback at 3? How do you bet against Tom Brady and Bill Belichick with 2 weeks to prepare? Knowing that, Jared Goff just looked shaky, I thought, in the first half. And Todd Gurley they say he's healthy, but he's clearly not.
Something's not right there. But I mean, 2 weeks is a long time. Something's not right there, but 2 weeks is a long time.
I tend to think
it's going to be a Patriots home game, right? I mean, there's no Rams fans. Like, A, there's no Rams fans. B, there's no Rams fans that are traveling cross country
to Atlanta, right? I mean, yeah.
You know, whereas for Patriots Nation, they can't. Nothing's guaranteed beyond this. It's probably the end for Gronk. I mean, it's doubtful it's the end of Brady, but if he wins, you never know. I mean, I tend to think that dome is going to be rocking for the Patriots, and that it might be one-sided enough that it actually gets to Goff a little bit.
Well, you know, I mean, I think, I mean, again, like, I've got a crap ton of experience covering Patriots Super Bowls. I've been to a bunch of them. I feel like the one against the Seahawks was pretty split. The,
yeah.
You know, the Giants one was pretty split back in 2011. I would say, you know, I mean, the Eagles game last year was all Eagles.
Eagles.
I mean, yeah, but that was almost like the Patriots had just beaten the Falcons. You know, they felt like they were playing with house money. Nobody wanted to go to Minneapolis to be in the freezing cold and deal with like a bunch of drunk Eagles fans. This one feels different.
Yeah, I mean, they're the Eagles' first time ever. I mean, not first time ever. I mean, first time since Harold Carmichael and those guys. But I mean, you know, first time in forever, and it was their first one, and nobody thought it was going to happen when Wentz got hurt. First one post Andy Reid. Mm. So yeah, I think it'll be a Patriots-centric crowd. McVay is special, amazing. He'll be prepared as well. I just think they'll find a way. I'll say this, really super early to be talking X-Factors or whatever. If the Rams win this game, Dante Fowler is going to have the kind of game that, like, you know, Bennett had against them in the Seattle Super Bowl. There has to be somebody generating pressure off the edge. I think they will find a way to block up Sue and Donald for the most part, and Brady's so quick at getting rid of the ball. But if those two are collapsing and there's nobody collecting on the outside, I think Brady will pick that team apart. I just do. I still don't really buy the Rams' defense. There's so many different ways that the Rams can beat you. And the one thing that I kept watching in that game, the Saints-Rams game, anytime they ran Kamara on a wheel route, anytime they just took a running back and put him out in the flat, it was like 8 to 12
yards.
Yes.
And then they stopped.
They could not defend it.
But they stopped.
They couldn't defend it with linebackers. They couldn't defend it with safeties. I mean, the Patriots could put a formation out there where you've got Stallworth and White in the backfield with Brady, and one's running a wheel route one way and one's running the wheel route the other way. And I bet he could throw that, you know, to those two 15 times and go 14 of 15 for 225 and whatever. I just don't think the Rams can stop that. Not on a fast track, not in that dome. I think that's going to be a real problem, especially with nobody who you have to really fear coming off the edge. I mean, the Patriots have seen Fowler. They know what he's all about. They saw him in Jacksonville. I just don't think they're going to let the twin towers on the inside keep them from another ring. And if they do prevent those two from wreaking havoc, I don't know who else on that defense really gives them problems.
Did you, when you said Stallworth, did you mean Burkhead or, you said
I meant Patterson.
Oh, yeah, Patterson, right.
So, you could put Patterson and White back there.
Yeah.
And play games with them all day long and just throw screen passes to them. And I don't know that they could ever stop it.
Well, I thought that I was really surprised, Jason, by two things. One, in the different games. One, like, Andy Reid he waited until the adjustment was just weird. He waited until the second half to really start throwing to his running backs. It's like, dude, this is the matchup that you're going to win with if you're getting blitzed. Get this short stuff out. Don't try and bomb it down the field to Tyreek and Kelsey. Go short when they're bringing this coverage.
I feel bad saying anything negative about this kid. I wouldn't even couch it as negative, but nothing's perfect. I think a lot of that is Mahomes, man.
He
trusts the arm so much.
Yeah, maybe so.
And, you know,
maybe.
Other than Gilmore, I don't think there was any DB there that he feared. And he thought, I can throw guys open or I can throw it in the air and wait for Hill to get there. And it's hard for him to go underneath. You know what I mean? I'm guessing Andy Reid had talked to him at halftime.
Yeah.
we got to throw short to set up long. Like, when it's third and seven, we don't need 52 yards. You know what I mean? We just need 8.
Yeah.
When it's third and three, we don't need 28 yards. We just need 4.
Yeah.
And I think there was a little bit of a recalibration there as well. I think Mahomes, the moment got to him, and It's Tom bleeping Brady on the other sideline, and I need chunk yards, chunk yards, chunk yards. And I think they calmed him down a little bit at halftime, and then he started operating from the inside out, and then they started carving him up. But certainly the approach changed, whether that was play calling or just, you know, him keeping his eyes close before he moves them downfield and not just locking in on hoisting the ball down the field.
I think you're right. And it 100%. He looked much calmer in the second half. And that's something that's sort of been an issue for him during his first year as a starter, being just too gassed up in these big spots, especially on the road or then in the playoffs.
Which is natural.
Yeah,
and you compare what he did to what Andrew Luck did and what, you know, Deshaun Watson did and what every other young quarterback in the playoffs has done. I mean, even compared to Goff. I mean, Goff, if the Saints, they were giving the Saints the game, the Saints just didn't take it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, 100%.
The Rams gave them the game in the first 20 minutes. The Saints just failed to put up 17. If they get 17, if it's 17-0 and not 13-0, they're probably, it might be lights out.
Yeah, or if it, God forbid, it's 21-0, good night, Rams. And that fake punt was huge by Sean McVay. Of course, Sean Payton should have seen that coming. But all, in the Rams game, what I was really surprised by, and maybe I need to go back and watch it because maybe it was Wade Phillips making adjustment. I'm not sure, though. I think it was more like there was that drive to start the third quarter, and the Saints got Alvin Kamara lined up against – Corey Littleton and Mark Barron.
They were destroying Littleton.
And they were shredding them. And like at some point, like it was either Joe Buck or Torrey, I think it was Joe Buck. He's like, Corey Littleton's just getting tired of this. It's like, yeah, I bet he is. He's chasing the fastest running back in football, and like the best pass catching running back, the most lethal weapon in that passing game, around the field. And he's getting absolutely annihilated. I don't think one, that the Rams linebackers can match up with the Patriots running backs, obviously. I mean, James White has these Super Bowl moments. He's a monster. They deploy him like crazy in these spots. And two, I don't think Josh McDaniels is going to get away from that the same way that it felt like Sean Payton kind of got away from that and Drew Brees got away from that. They sort of stopped.
Well, and Sean, I know it was tough sledding running the game, running the ball, but the key metric that nobody's talking about in that game is, I think Kamara had 9 carries and Ingram had 8. I mean, they're all about volume in the run game. They're about systematically sucking your soul out of your body and grinding you down. And 17 combined carries for those two just ain't getting it done. Now, it looked to me like Anders Pete was playing with one hand, and that was a problem. And the Rams were obviously not giving up much on the ground. I think those two combined 17 carries for 48 yards. But the Saints equation really is getting 35 carries out of those two and only having Brees throw the ball 30 times. And, you know, that's what, who they were when they went on that, you know, whatever 9-10 game winning streak, whatever it was, when they were looked like for 2 months the best team in football, it was because they were balanced to a fault. And it was about setting you up early with, even if it's not, even if they're only running for 3-5 a carry, 3 a carry, they just keep coming at you and they're softening you up. And there's going to be one spot where you bring too many people down in the box and then it's a play action bomb over your head or something to gain, but they're just going to make you keep respecting the run. And the Rams didn't really have to do that. And I think, you know, a lot of times it's not even the effectiveness of the run. It's just the number of carries and the cumulative impact of it. And I think in this game, if the Saints had 25 completions and 30 rushes, they probably win just because with that lead, what it does to the clock, you know, and they just never really adopted that mindset where it was like, we're just going to out-ugly you for a period of time. That never materialized. And that was a big surprise to me.
Yeah, I mean, it is wild to think that the Saints were up 13-0. And again, like you said, it should have been 17, should have been 21, something like that. They were up that big, and Drew Brees threw 40 times, and they only ran the ball 17 times. And I think the difference, too, between the Patriots and the Saints, that Patriots offensive line is not just healthy, and playing well, it's hitting its peak at the exact right time. Like, this is what you want if you're New England. You're running this power game, and I get it. Ndamukong Suh's
going to do it. Well, it's also an eight-man offense.
Yeah, they got bodies.
Five, plus Allen, plus Gronk, who can grade you, plus a fullback.
Yeah, And the thing about Gronk is they've done such a good job protecting his body, even as banged up as he is, that like you saw it against the Chiefs. I mean, he had Gronk like plays, even if they weren't, you know, they weren't full, like I'm at my maximum superpower. But he's got 60 minutes left. The dude, I mean, like he maybe he walks away after this game. Who, I mean, whatever. It's just 60 minutes left in his season, maybe his career, the year, whatever it is. He can uncork for 60 minutes. He can block like Gronk, and he can play in the passing game like Super Gronk and not worry about how his back is going to feel next week, you know, because there's no more matchups left. And I think you'll see him leave it on the field, in the Super Bowl. All right. Let's take a quick break, and then we're going to come back. We'll talk about the line of the Patriots. It's a very interesting gambling stuff that you've got queued up in a column coming this week.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former sports center anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's the butterfly effect for real.
All right, so gambling, kind of a thing, sports betting, we talk about it on here. The Patriots line has already moved, as we mentioned. There's a bunch of money on the Patriots. People just like to gamble. By the way, quick gut reaction, Jason. Baltimore Orioles, over under 60.5 wins. That's according to betonline.ag, which just released MLB totals far too early.
Five. So we're talking
61.
I think they could win 97 games.
Really?
Yeah.
Win 97 games?
No, sorry.
Lose 97.
Sorry. Yes, I'm sorry.
I was like, really?
No.
I don't think
so. My bad. No, I think they can hold their losses to 97.
They can only lose 97 games.
Like, I think last year they lost like 115. I'm thinking this year they lose between 97 to 100. So I think they could win 61 games.
Okay. That's going.
But, I mean, I'd have to look at all of them. Like, I don't know that one's, you know, screaming out, you know.
No, I did. Like, it literally.
There could be other teams where I'm like, well, I really like that one. Like, I don't love this one, but I do believe.
That's by far.
Much, I mean, I won't go into all the reasons. Nobody cares. But, I think they cap the losses at 97 to 100.
It's five wins below the next lowest total, which is the Miami Marlins at 65.5. So, I mean, at 60, it's hard to lose 100 games 2 years in a row. We'll see what the Orioles do. We can talk about that
more. You could do it. Could be done. And honestly, they're not, I mean, no one over there at the warehouse would be crying if they do lose 100. Like, if they lose 112 to 115 again, people would be like, okay, that's a bit much. But, like, if they lost 100, nobody's going to cry. Because that's just where they are as a franchise right now in this long rebuild. But I think they won't be as tragically horrific as they were last year.
All right. What about gambling?
There you go.
It's good. I don't want to lean too long on the Orioles. That's worse than a Patrick Mahomes milk take from Sean. What about gambling in the NFL? Because you've been digging into this. People love to get some early insider nuggets on the podcast before they come out in the column. What's going on with gambling in the NFL now?
I've talked to enough people at the league office who, as much as the NFL is going to be very careful publicly about how much they embrace sports betting and gambling as a concept each step of the way, these owners see a pie in the sky here. They see potential revenue streams that won't approach their broadcast contracts, but could become the second most prolific revenue stream for them on the whole as a league. When you factor in sponsorships, when you factor in advertising, when you factor in their own ability to profit internally off of next-gen stats And when you factor in all the contracts that they're going to bid out eventually for who's the official real-time stats provider of the NFL, who's the official information technology source of the NFL, who's the official betting house of the NFL, it just goes on and on and on from the team level and then at the macro league level. It's being seen as an absolute game changer. There is a definite strong push among ownership to have a lot of, I mean, you got a 7-month offseason to sort a lot of this out so that week one of the 2019 season could look, feel, I won't say taste, but completely different for NFL consumers and viewers than we've ever seen before. I think the way games are presented on TV, what you are allowed to talk about on pregame shows versus what you've been allowed to talk about in the past, what, you know, turning the knob leading up to kickoff of an NFL game, it would not shock me by week one if it's like it was 5 years ago where every other commercial is FanDuel or DraftKings. You know what I mean? Like when the daily fantasy stuff was really on the rise before the government came in and regulated it, you literally couldn't get around those commercials. And everything sponsored by one of those two. I mean, I think that's where we're headed, but it's going to be Caesars and Ladbrokes and William Hill and, you know what I mean, Bet.com and whatever else. That's coming. And it's very real, and the league is embracing it internally in ways that I think a lot of people aren't aware of. But, you know, I've been told that for months now there's the league established a sports betting committee among owners and top NFL officials, and they've been holding lengthy conference calls every Friday figuring out these big issues. Because once you put your name to it and once this is the official real-time stat service of the NFL, like if somebody bet $15,000 that the next play is a sack by Aaron Donald, you know what I mean? And then you come out on Tuesday and say, no, that sack is now Ndamukong Suh's. You know, the league's in trouble. If the league's names want it, the league's taking money from this, and the league's saying this is it, you can't, there's no do-overs, you know what I mean? There's no go-backs. And that's the kind of issues that they're looking at right now and drilling down deep on and figuring out, okay, does this work better than that? And I think it will be a large part of what they use this AAFL for, this spring league that's starting, I think, what, a couple weeks after the Super Bowl or a week after the Super Bowl. You know, the NFL is working in conjunction with them, and a lot of what they're going to use that for, I'm told, is an IT incubator. It's trying out all these different, you know, you got these different companies who say our model works better than theirs and blah, 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 blah. It's going to be an incubator for technology and software development and research development for these different models to figure out which one works best. But I could see a completely different horizon to where it's still sort of been marginalized now, right? I mean, we can't talk about point spreads on the NFL today. None of the official, you know, like they can't do it on Fox. You can't, you know, you can't use team nicknames, right? Like you, none of these places can say, oh, this team, you can't use any of the NFL graphics, right? You can't use any logos or trademarks.
Yeah, on our picks page.
Right, on any of these gambling related shows. But like, once the league has an official, you know what I mean, official betting house and official this, official that, you're going to have to go into those contracts and change a lot of those language. And that's something else that this sports betting committee, I'm told, is working on as well. And how much time do you need to give your broadcast partners to maybe rework the way they present a lot of this stuff? Not that it's going to become all gambling all the time, but I think the day is coming sooner rather than later where the screen itself, you'll have the ability, you know what I mean? It'll have all these different prop bets down the side of a screen if you decide to consume, you know what I mean, that view of the game versus the standard view of the game. I mean, that's where it's going, and there's so much money out there, these owners believe, that I have a hard time seeing them let a whole nother season go by before they start capitalizing on it.
Are we talking about the All-American Football League? Not the not the Alliance of American Football, just to be clear.
Oh, no, I don't. Whatever the one that's starting in like 2 weeks.
Oh,
the one where Mike Vick is coaching the Atlanta team and Brad Childress was the OC, and then he left.
Yeah, the AAF, which is like CBS is involved in it.
AAF.
Yeah, okay. Just making sure. But it's like, You have the Arizona Hotshots, the Atlanta Legends, Birmingham Iron, Memphis Express, all that. Okay,
league is going to be used. I don't know how much of it you're going to be able to see if you're watching the games, but trust me, inside the league office, they are going to have a lot of different things that they're doing behind the scenes that they can just go back and analyze. Okay, did this work better than that? And is this technology better than that one? And do we need 10 microchips in a ball or 500 microchips in a ball? You know, that kind of stuff is coming, and maybe that dovetails, not to play the role of host here, with changes in officiating as well and what the thrust of the future is of officiating in terms of technology and IT and more cameras or, you know, different cameras and all that stuff to try to ensure that whether it's Big Brother or the Eye in the Sky or whoever, that the right calls are being made, regardless of how they're getting to that conclusion.
And you're always welcome to play host. It's easier for me. But that sort of makes sense why you see all these former, you know, I mean, like, you know, Dean Blandino, Mike Pereira, former NFL officials are involved. I mean, you know, there are a lot of former NFL people who are involved in the way that the AAF is going. Bill Polian, one of the co-founders, along with Charlie Ebersol. I do think that when you talk about how gambling and technology go hand in hand, I think this brings into it the discussion of pass interference too, because if you bet on the Saints and Rams game, whether you bet on the Ram, I mean, you bet on one of a couple things, whether it was the Saints minus three, whether it was the Saints money line, whether it was the Rams money line or the Rams plus three, and that pass interference call, if you believe that Will Lutz was going to make the field goal, and he made one that was a little bit further away right after the call, so why wouldn't he make the 27-yarder? That pass interference call changed the outcome of the game and swung literally millions of dollars. Now, I was pointing this out on local radio in Raleigh on Tuesday or Monday, excuse me. And they were like, well, you know, that's part of, you know, you play the game and, you know, that's buyer beware. And I get it. I don't disagree with that. You know, when you gamble, you are inherently gambling. However, if the NFL is going to embrace gambling and say, we are all in on this, you know, we have, this is our official, cause, you know, betting partner, and like, you know, we're feeding the stats to these guys and we're taking a huge chunk of money off the top. You can't have something like that influence the outcome of a game, right?
I mean, I don't know that, look, judgment calls are judgment calls. You know, I don't know where the line is. I think it's from the league standpoint, what they're concerned about more is that somebody doesn't spot the ball egregiously. You know what I mean? 3 or 4 yards from where the point was. Things that you can check. Right. You know what I mean? Whether or not this reception goes to this guy or a sack goes to this guy and not that guy. Making sure that everything's ironclad so that across the board, that play was worth this many yards or this many points in real time and there's no going back. I mean, whether or not a guy would have made this after that, you know what I mean? Whatever happened in that call, Will Lutz may have been approaching the ball and twisted his ankle and just completely, slipped or whatever. Like, I don't know how far you can take it that way and whether the league's really concerned about how that stuff affects gambling as much as whether or not if that should have been a touchdown for player X, you know what I mean? And everybody, and that is always reviewable, and we've got this standard of, whether it's
irrefutable evidence.
Irrefutable or whatever, you know, where is that line and what does that really mean? I think the focus is more now in terms of ball placement and whether that ball absolutely got over that goal line or whether it touched that goal line, whether it hit that pylon or not, you know, ensuring that is accurate. They're never going to get, look, whatever happens with the future of officiating, this guy's fired, that guy's fired, full-time crews, video replay, you know, video replay stations, staffed by top NFL officials in each stadium, right on the sidelines, whatever it is, they're never – stuff like that where even the rule book can't define it for every single circumstance. Right. There's still going to be dangling participles and loose ends, you know what I mean, and things where somebody's just got to make a call, yay or nay, it was or it wasn't. I don't think you're ever solving that riddle entirely. But I think they'll try to find different ways to reach those conclusions, which may include even more of a technological bent.
But doesn't the NFL need to have some sort of fail-safe to be able to pop in and say, hold on a second, 60-year-old man with
Brother's got to be more involved, probably, right, is what it comes down to. But I just don't know that Big Brother's always going to get it right either. I mean, like the Edelman play.
I thought they got it wrong. I was
yeah,
shocked.
Yeah, I mean, so that's what I mean. Like, something like that, you're never going to please. Not everybody's going to see it the same way. It's like staring at a piece of art or you know what I mean, whatever. No one's going to. I mean, Prisco doesn't even believe in art. He doesn't even think it exists as a concept. You know what I mean? So, like, no one's ever going to look at that Picasso and see the exact same thing in it.
No, but, I feel you. I mean, I guess, all right, put a different, like, I do think, I don't want to get a derail on the pass interference thing, but we can talk about that in a second, but the spotting the ball and everything, that's interesting too, because, so like, as it stands right now, like, you could bet on whether, and this has actually been a really good bet this playoff season. It hit multiple times in both games of the AFC Championship and NFC Championship. You could bet on the over-under longest touchdown scored going into the game, Saints-Rams, longest touchdown scored over, or shortest touchdown scored, excuse me, one over under 1.5 yards. In other words, you need a punch in from the 1 yard line. It happened multiple times in this game. But what's interesting about that is, like, you see a guy, it's like, he's down at the one. It's like, well, he looks like he could be down at the two, but, you know, and that's where it gets a little tricky. And because gambling is on the fringe right now, where you're sort of doing it in a way that, it's not condoned by the NFL. So, like, the NFL doesn't have to care whether the ball is actually spotted at the one or two. But once it's legalized,
no one's suing them. You know what I mean? You might try to get your class action lawsuit against whoever.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
MyBookie.net or whatever, but that's not their problem.
Right.
Once you put your name on it and you're accepting that money, then it's a whole different ball of wax.
Well, that's sort of my point. Like, I heard Cousin Sal from the Jimmy Kimmel Show was on Bill Simmons' podcast, and did you see what he and Clay Travis did with the Saints ticket? Did you see that?
I did. I don't know Cousin Sal, but I did know that the Saints. My prediction of the Saints as Super Bowl champs, I absolutely positively knew that was going down in flames and had been completely torpedoed the moment I heard that Clay Travis paid $30,000 for that ticket. I knew there was no chance the Saints were winning the Super Bowl. In fact, I knew they weren't going to win. They probably weren't going to win the championship game.
They might, the referee may just not like Clay Travis. Like, that's like,
well, Bill, it's not just that. I mean, does he, I don't know. I mean, every time, does he ever pick anything right? I haven't.
Look, anytime, if you're going to spend $56,000 on a Super Bowl, on a Saints to win the Super Bowl ticket, just do it before the season when they were, like, better odds. I mean, all right. Well, we got to get out of here. Jason LaCanfora, watch him on CBS Sports HQ. Follow him on Twitter at Jason LaCanfora. We'll talk to you next week at the Super Bowl,
I'll see you in Atlanta, buddy.
Sounds good, dude.